can learn this art. Of course, it won't work for you. Why won't it work? Because you have to get initiated by a spiritual master or a martial guru who has been initiated in a particular discipline of success. The Vedic literatures teach us some pranaya vinay mantras te nishpalavataha, that unless you receive a specific mantra in disciplic succession, it's not effective. But everyone can chant the Hare Krishna mantra because that's given by Lord Chaitanya to everyone. But as far as other mantras, even the Gayatri mantras, you can't chant them. You can chant them, but they won't be effective unless you receive them. And so the Vedic mantras are like that too. So they were so powerful, these Brahmins, they could bring someone back to life. It's pretty amazing. And in this sacrifice, of course, the demigods came and they wanted to bring back to life. But even the demons had a mantra which they could bring people back to life. Mrityu Sanjeevani, Shukracharya, the guru of the demons, was so powerful that he could bring people back to life. Actually, Bali Maharaj was killed one time and he brought him back to life. This story is in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, very powerful. So, Maharaj Nimik comes back to life out of the vat of oil. And he says here, this is what's happening here, I do not want to be back to life. Pretty good. And the reason, let's go back a little, the reason they wanted to bring him back to life was because they needed a king. The kings in those days were bred. That may be an interesting statement. In other words, they would breed. What do I mean by breeding kings? Not that they did artificial insemination or anything like that, but they would arrange marriages so that certain characteristics were there. Let's say if a king or a prince married a girl from a different kingdom, then she would have to be Kshatriya, have the same characteristics. These women actually had different varnas too, which is interesting. Sometimes the men say, only men have varnas. Women are just meant to stay in the kitchen and cook and roll chapatis all the time. But that's not the Vedic system. I mean, you have even Subhadra, when Arjuna was kidnapping her, she was driving the chariot. And she was a pretty good chariot driver. So, you know, anyway. So the kings were bred, or the princes were bred, to have the proper characteristics. I mean, of course, they also got to choose their wives and husbands too, but they had a limited choice. Otherwise, they weren't allowed. Even in the UK, it's like that. Yeah, at least traditionally, if a prince or a king married someone outside of the, you know, kingly, whatever it is, dynasty, then they'd lose their position. You know that? In the UK, it used to be like that. I'm not sure if it's still like that. But it used to be like that in the UK. So that's called eugenics. That's a technical word. Eugenic means to breed people. That may appear heartless, but that's what was happening. So they wanted to have a proper king, and there was no king. And that was the motivation for that. And so Maharaj Nimi here, he's refusing. So they're in a dilemma. They need a king, but the king is dead. He hasn't any children or any qualified children. So what to do? And later on in this particular chapter, you hear what they do. And it's another scientific thing, you know, scientific using mantras, that they churn his body, and out of the body comes a kid. And that kid becomes the next king. And so this particular story is the goes before the whole Ramayan story. And the reason it goes before the whole Ramayan story is that the first child that was born from the churning of Maharaj Nimi's body was named Janaka. But that's not the Janaka who is the father of Sita Devi. That was Janaka the first. Like in England and other places like that, you have like King Edward the first, King Edward the second, King Edward the third, or our friend Henry the eighth. That, you know, that's a joke. You hadn't caught it yet. Anyway, so you have the different kings, you know, Elizabeth, even the queens, Elizabeth I. And so Janaka the first, Then there was Janaka the second, Janaka the third, Janaka the fourth, and some one of these lines of Janaka was the Janaka that was the father of Sita Devi. And the city also became named after this process of churning, because the word in Sanskrit is Maitir, and it became known as Maitila or Mitila. That's the city of Janaka Maharaj, who was the father of Sita Devi. So, you know, that's why this whole story is being told. Now, as far as the topic of this verse, it's very interesting that he's refusing to take a material body, basically because he wants to go back to God and he wants liberation. Now, I'm going to contrast that with what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught us. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his Shikshashtaka, Manma Janmani Janmani Shvare Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoy Tukitoye. What does he say? He says, I'm willing to take birth after birth in this material world. But not just birth after birth, but Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoy Tukitoye. If I can engage in your unalloyed devotional service. You understand? And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that I'm even willing to take birth as a worm, Kita. Pretty good, isn't it? But Kita Janmohai, that means Janma, birth, anyway. Yata tu yadas. If it's a worm in the house of your devotee, I guess you got to eat a lot of prasadam if you're a worm in the house of a devotee. So in other words, a pure devotee of the Lord, and I'm not saying that Maharaj is not a pure devotee, but the pure devotee, the type of teaching that Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya are trying to instill in us, is that we should be willing, ultimately, when we become pure devotees, to serve Krishna anywhere. As stated in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the consciousness of a pure devotee is Narayana Paraksarve Nakutaschina Vibhyati Swarga Pravarga Narakeshu Abhituliyartha Darshana. It's interesting. That's a description of Maharaj Ambarish. It's not Maharaj Ambarish. Maybe it's another story. That a devotee of the Lord, I'm trying to remember what the name is. Anyway, a devotee of the Lord is willing to go to heaven. He's willing to go to hell, or he's willing to go back to Godhead. And he sees them all api tulyartha darshana. He sees them all exactly the same. Why is that? I mean, why would a devotee see heaven, hell, going back to Godhead exactly the same? Because he's doing the same thing everywhere. Prabhupada gave the example when he was commenting on this verse in the class, of a wheat threshing machine. That means a machine that actually harvests wheat. He said, if you take that machine, wherever you send it or put it, it will only do the same thing. In other words, a devotee, wherever you send him, what is he going to do? He's going to preach Krishna consciousness. In fact, going to hell might be a pretty good place to preach. Why? Because you don't have to convince people they're suffering. You know, you got the, what as they say in Christianity, the lakes of fire and brimstone. You've heard about this before? And the devil is there poking everybody with his pitchfork. Of course, we don't believe in the devil, but we do believe in Yamaraj and the nice Yamadutas, which we've all seen many times before we came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So you go to hell and there's the Yamadutas torturing you, say, chant Hare Krishna, I can free you from all that. And you say, wow, okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And if you go to heaven, preaching is kind of hard in heaven. Like, even in the material world, when you go to a place where everything is very heavenly, very difficult to preach. I mean, many years ago I used to be the GBC of Hawaii. You been to Hawaii?
Yes.
It's heavenly. The avocados are this big. And they grow freely everywhere. And it's, you know, I'm not attracting you all to go there. But there's a problem. The problem is when it's time to give Bhagavatam class, all the brahmacharis are surfing. That's my practical experience. You know, nobody was there. Where's everybody? Surf's up. Uh-huh. All right. You want to join us? No thanks. So in any case, a devotee is willing to go anywhere because you're connected with Krishna anywhere through the process of sankirtan, through the process of serving. And also, another point is, a pure devotee has his internal life. We were mentioning this, I think it was yesterday, about Srinivasa Acharya, that a devotee has his internal relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. So in other words, a devotee is in the spirit, pure devotee, like Prabhupada, is in the spiritual world simultaneous to being in this material world. I mean, you can't even say he's in the material world, but manifesting his presence in the material world, being compassionate. So therefore, you have devotees like Narad Muni, who are simply traveling sometimes, material world, spiritual world. And then you have devotees like Srila Prabhupada, who were sent to the material world by Krishna and Srimati Radharani to preach Krishna consciousness. And they're not saying, get me out of here. They're saying, you know, just let me serve. Actually, Prabhupada has one poem. He says, in his humility, he says, I pray that in some future life I will have your service. Anyway, referring to the spiritual master. So a devotee is very humble like that. So our standard is a little bit different than what's spoken in this verse. However, for those of you who are not pure devotees, Prabhupada said it's good to want to get out of the material world. Because one devotee one time went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I just wanted to serve you birth after birth. And Prabhupada said, no, you should want to get the hell out of here. So, but there's different instructions for different people on different levels of devotion and service. Like when you first join the movement, you're taught you should eat so much so it comes out of your mouth, basically. You know, it goes up, fills up to your neck. You heard that? And I followed that very nicely. That's probably the only instruction I followed completely of Srila Prabhupada. But anyway, no, I'm just joking. And we would, after prasadam Sunday feast, we would lay on our sides because it was so much pain from the liver or whatever. And then you would have this quote from Prabhupada that after overeating, you should lay on your left side, not your right side. Just so you know, that's Prabhupada's instruction. And so, but I don't think that the instruction to eat so much it comes up to your neck or goes out your mouth or whatever is applicable when you're like 45 years in the Hare Krishna movement. So there's different instructions. Like when you first come to the movement, Prabhupada says, do whatever you're doing for Krishna. And then after a while you discover, you know, sarvadharma, prajajam, kamsha, namprajat, you know, surrender. But we don't tell that to people first. First we say, you know, eat this sweet ball. Then after a while, they understand, oh my God, I got to surrender. So, the same thing with this principle of wanting to get out of the material world. We should want to get out of the material world. But when we become pure devotees, then the higher taste is just a loving exchange with Krishna, pleasing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, pleasing our spiritual master. So you don't find Srila Prabhupada praying to get out of the material world. You find Prabhupada overcome with compassion, just trying to help people, being willing to take another birth. I mean, just it's like it's sometimes mentioned that if you have a disciple and the disciple doesn't make it, you have to come back again. Don't remind me. So, oh my God, now I'm depressed. So you hear that, and there has to be that willingness to do that. And that's because one has to develop the compassion. Paradukaduki, like, you know, it's like Vasudev Dutt. Vasudev Dutt was saying, you know, let me stay in the material world forever as long as everybody else can go back to God. But that's a very high platform. So we should understand what platform we're at, what verse of the Shikshashtaka relates to us, as we were mentioning yesterday. and then function accordingly and gradually make more and more progress, but eventually keep that goal in mind of pure devotional service. So any questions or comments? Yeah. You have a question? Yeah.
I'm my question is, how do you know the surface won't equal points?
How do you what?
No, the surface won't equal points. Like you said, you could go to the material world, the spiritual world, and you could see equal points.
Yeah, maybe they were. Maybe
the surface won't equal points. I was just wondering if you could make some comment about
that. That's interesting. That's interesting. We have one of my godbrothers who left this god. He opened up a surfing place in India. You're probably aware of this. And he's teaching like surfing yoga or something like that. Maybe they were. Maybe I'm just criticizing some advanced Vaishnavas like that. Maybe, you're right. Maybe they were equal poised. And so, but in any case, that's an interesting point. I never heard that question before. Thank you for the question. They weren't interested in hearing from Bhagavatam class. I mean, because later in the day, I have to be honest, I went surfing too. So, but not during Bhagavatam class. So, yes. I have to beg forgiveness from the surfers for perhaps offending them. But other than the surfing experience in Hawaii, I saw a lot of things, like practically no one in the temple was following the principles when I came to the temple. The Pujaris were having boyfriends and girlfriends over for the night. And I sort of cleaned house. Anyway. So it was a challenge, because things are so nice in Hawaii. That was the point I was making. Maybe the surfers were pure devotees and I'm just like a Kanishka adhikari, doesn't understand there. Level of advancement. Thank you for the question.
Maybe you could comment on following the process.
Following the process? Well, the process, there's two aspects to the process. One is more important than the other aspect. One is the external aspect and the internal aspect. So we can follow externally and not follow internally, and that's not really following. Following is to be done internally. And externally, of course, happens as a result of the internal following. That means, as we were mentioning yesterday, to be conscious of the reason for what we're doing while we're doing it. So, in other words, I was thinking, this morning I was chanting Jai Radha Madhava before class. Some of you were here, some of you were not here. And I was actually thinking of the meaning of it as I was chanting. I was thinking, Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari, that Radha and Krishna are enjoying in the bushes, Vrindavan. And then Gopi Janda Balabha, given by Hare Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, he's the pleaser of the gopis. Anyway, so I'm not going to give a whole translation of that. But so I was doing internal devotional service. So that's really what it means to follow. Because you could follow externally, and that's called Niyamagraha, and then that external following without the internal following is actually detrimental to devotional service. According to Rupa Goswami, it's one of the causes of fall down. So, yeah, internal.
Thank you so much.
We have to be internal. And maybe those surfers were internal. Maybe they're riding the waves. Hare Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, you can become Krishna conscious, referring to a drunkard, if you chant Hare Krishna between each drink of vodka. But that's not, that injunction is not for us. Yeah. Oh, you have a question?
The spiritual master who takes on disciples.
Yeah.
And how in the material world, the pure devotee sees it as good as Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
So, is that always the spiritual master who's like compassionate? Is that always going to be persons in the material world? Like when the spiritual master takes takes us back to the spiritual level,
right.
Takes on disciples. This similar to like Lord Buddha, how he like preached the Krishna consciousness in a way, and then takes everyone back home.
Yeah.
Does that mean like his mission is to take everyone back home and then no one left, or is there always going to be like people coming and going, and that's how we like grow stronger? And where does it stop, or does it just keep going?
Well, that's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that even if everyone went back to Godhead, who is like present or manifest, there's all sorts of living entities who are in what we call an inert state, you know, like suspended animation, who are ready to take birth in the material. So the whole material world would fill up again. Even if everyone, of course, the desire of a bona fide spiritual master is to take everyone back to Godhead, but, you know, that's a lot of people. A lot of living entities, so, Prabhupada also said that Krishna and Lord Chaitanya could have taken everyone back to Godhead, but he wanted to give us something to do. So, you know, it'd be kind of boring. Kind of boring if everybody was back to Godhead and I was the only person here, so. I don't know what I would do for association. So the whole material world will always be full. Like, sometimes people ask the question, I mean, it's a funny question. They said to Prabhupada, you know, what if everybody goes back to Godhead? What will happen to the material world? And we can raise the same question. What if, you know, what if you free the prisoners? Will there be any more criminals? I mean, there will always be criminals. Another question they asked Prabhupada is, what if everybody becomes a brahmachari? How will there be children? You know, it's something that will never happen.
There's always a balance.
There's always a balance, yeah. Good question. So any other questions? Quick questions? I think we've overstayed our time. We'll get in trouble. So according to that clock, it says 8:15. Oh, it says 8:15. Class ends by 8:15.
Questions.
Oh, questions, okay. So any other quick questions? Comments, arguments, problems, issues? Yes.
I just wanted to share something. You mentioned the point of there's no hard and fast rules for chanting.
Yeah.
And I've heard, and I can't remember the word, the explanation, and I just wanted to see your comment on it, that actually there's no hard and fast rules when we sing Hare Krishna as in Sankirtan.
Yeah.
Altogether, but there are actually hard and fast rules when we chant japa. Whereas when we do the translation for that verse that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we translate as chanted, so often it comes across that, for example, when we chant japa, there's no hard and fast rules, just chanted. That's just something that I heard a couple months ago. So that the translation should actually be when we sing together in congregation, there's no hard and fast rules. You can sing anywhere in the streets and homes and hospitals and prisons.
Yeah.
And so just.
Okay, I mean, my understanding is that no hard and fast rules. I mean, of course, there are rules of attention. We do have, you know, the 10 offenses on chanting, which apply in kirtan too. You know, if someone says that they don't apply in kirtan, that's absolutely wrong. Because when you're doing kirtan and you're thinking, let's say you're thinking of some nonsense, that's also offensive. We do have, I wouldn't call them hard and fast rules, I'd call them, you know, injunctions. I mean, it's the same thing. Injunctions for chanting, whether you're chanting japa or whether you're chanting kirtan, you have to be attentive. You shouldn't be committing the 10 offenses on chanting. So I would, the correct understanding, niyamena tishtan, I mean, if you actually analyze the Sanskrit, that it refers to time, place, and circumstance rules. And japa, I mean, for example, I chant japa in an airplane when I'm traveling, and that's not exactly a pure place. So I don't see what hard and fast rules I'm following when I chant japa. You know, especially traveling. Gayatri has certain hard and fast rules, but still, You have to chant when you're traveling. So sometimes I have to chant Gayatri when I'm traveling. And it's hard to figure out what time of day it is when you're traveling too. Particularly between time zones, and sometimes you miss a day, sometimes you get an extra day when you're going across the international dateline. So I take, the direct meaning of that is the time, place, and circumstance rules. It refers to the Vedic injunctions. And the Vedic injunctions, those rules don't apply chanting Hare Krishna loudly, softly, japa, or kirtan. The Hare Krishna mantra, Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya, is completely transcendental. It's non-different than Krishna. Nama Chintamani Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Puna Shuddha Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Nama Namayam. So whether we chant softly or loudly, that's the Hare Krishna mantra. Of course, there's specific benefits for Sankirtan when you're engaging others in chanting the holy names. But, you know, japa, you can chant japa anywhere, everywhere. Does that answer that question? But don't commit offenses. I mean, it's not that when you're out there on Sankirtan chanting the holy name in Mahakirtan that you should be contemplating the objects of the senses. That's an offense. It's Krishna's holy name. So 10 offenses always apply. So, any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, when I heard that when you're chanting and you inspire other people to chant, whatever purification or benefit they get is added to yours.
That's good.
So if you go out and sing, like 1,000 people.
That's true.
Chant,
I mean, yeah, you get some benefit, whether you actually get the same benefit as them or whatever, but you get benefit from Krishna. I mean, exactly the percentage. I mean, also there's injunctions. If someone is married, if one person does the devotional service, they both get the benefit. But it's not that, you know, if someone's married, that just let your wife do all the service and you sleep all day long. You know, I'm getting, you know, you chant 32 rounds, you know, so that you chant my 16 and your own 16, and that's enough. So, yeah, I mean, definitely there's benefit getting, having other people chant. But the real benefit of chanting is how purely you chant. You know, with the right mood. Attentively, not just attentively, but with the right mood. You know, and as I mentioned yesterday, there's a verse in the Shikshashika that resonates with all of us. And you have to find that. Because the Shikshashika verses indicate different levels of spiritual advancement. The Acharyas, such as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, have analyzed the Shikshashika verses in terms of levels of advancement. Beginning with Ado Shraddha Tatas, I don't know if you're familiar with that verse, but beginning with the different levels like initial faith, association with devotees, following the rules and regulations, getting rid of the anarthas, becoming fixed in devotional service, getting the taste, getting completely attached to Krishna, getting emotions, bhava, and finally prema. So each and every one of those verses refers to one level of devotional service. Also refers, I mean, if you really want to get esoteric, also refers to a different time of Krishna's day. Did you know that? The Ashtakali Lila. Because Krishna does things at different times of the day. You know, first he wakes up, but he's not at home. Like the first part of the day, I don't know if I should mention this in class. Anyway, I'll do it. You got me started. So the first time, part of the day, 3:30 in the morning, this gives you a meditation. Krishna wakes up, but he's woken up by the gopis and the other, even the animals around there, because he's with Radharani and he's not home. So Krishna has to get home in time before he's discovered not being in his bedroom. So those are... Oh my God, I don't know why I mentioned this. But those... And get thrown out of the Hare Krishna movement. But anyway, so those devotees who are on a very high level of devotional service, they actually connect each verse of the Shikshastika with one of those times of Krishna's day. And also they connect each pair of words in the Maha Mantra with each verse of the Shikshastika with each time of Krishna's day. Anyone's heard about this before? Forget it, I said it. Because I don't want to get reported for telling you about these things. But in other words, the first Hare Krishna, that's the first time of the day. Krishna wakes up. Okay, goes back home. And when he's so when he's going back home, and he has to get dressed real quickly before he goes back home, so he puts Radharani's dress on first. And she puts his dress. So Mother Yashoda comes in after he's gone home. You know, he's all scratched up and everything for all night. And she looks and she finds Krishna wearing a blue dress, a blue outfit. And she says, "Why do you have that blue outfit?" Krishna thinks, "Oh my God, I'm gonna get caught. Oh my God, you know, Scott." But anyway, he thinks, "Oh my God." And then he comes up with a good explanation. "Oh, it's Balaram's doing." So anyway, that had nothing to do with the question you asked. So, but you got me started. Right? Yeah. So a devotee connects these things with the Maha Mantra. It's amazing. I mean, I couldn't imagine how to connect while I'm chanting japa each pair of words with a different time of the day. But they do that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about that. And devotees meditate on the Ashtakaliya Leela, the different times of Krishna's day. Lord Chaitanya also has an Ashtakaliya Leela. Different things he does at different times of the day. Anyway, on that happy note, I think we should end class before I get in more trouble. So, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Holiness, dear Krishna Gosvami Maharaj Ki Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.